You're listening to The Lyric Feature on RTE Lyric FM.
On this week's Lyric Feature, we're craning our necks and looking to the skies, all the better to observe our wild birds, as we begin a new six-part series, Feather and Flock, which celebrates all things avian. The presenters are ecologist Anya Murray and folk musician Brian McGlynn, and in tonight's episode, they explore the world of that great harbinger of warmer weather, the cuckoo.
The cuckoo's a pretty bird. She sings as she flies. She brings us good tidings, tells us no lies. She sucks the little bird's eggs to keep her voice clear. And when she sings cuckoo, the summer draws near. As I walk down by the side of a bush, I heard two birds whistling, the blackbird and the thrush. I asked them the reason so merry they be, and the answer they gave me is we are single and we are free.
Welcome to the first episode of Feather and Flock, a series about some of Ireland's most iconic birds. The first episode is all about the cuckoo, their habitats, their song, their life strategy, and how they're represented in folklore. And of course, their incredible annual round trip from Africa to Ireland and back again. But first, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Anya Murray. I'm an ecologist and a writer. I love being out where wild things are, watching, listening, and doing my best to tune in to the intriguing goings-on in the natural world. Ireland's landscapes are relatively tame. We don't really have any properly wild habitats anymore. Mountains, valleys, and coastlines have all been shaped by thousands of years of human management, moulded by our machinery to fit with our framing of how things should be. But wild creatures still exist, an enormous diversity of beings who sing and dance to their own tune, who are free to live their lives in the ways that millions of years of evolution has produced. Their habitats are tempered by human influence, but the essence of their being is still very much wild. And the most visible, vocal, and present of these wild beings are birds. In this series, my friend and fellow bird enthusiast, Brian McGlynn, and I will be taking a deep dive into the ways of six birds who are intrinsically part of Irish landscapes and culture.
And I'm Brian McGlynn. I'm a musician and songwriter, mostly with my band Ye Vagabonds. And I'm also a bit obsessed with the natural world and the things that live around us. I grew up going on early morning bird surveys with my dad all around County Carlow. I learned to recognise their songs, sounds, colours, shapes, movements. Early on, I learned to be aware of birds because they have so much to tell us about the health of our environment. It's hard to imagine a world without birds in it. What would mornings and evenings sound like without them? Can you imagine summer without the return of the swallows to our skies? Or spring without the cuckoo? Can you imagine a world without birdsong? For each group of birds that we explore in this series, I have uncovered stories, songs, and folk associations to bring us closer to the character and symbolism of those species in our culture. And for each episode, I have curated and written both new and old music with a host of collaborators to illustrate the lives of these little beings. This series is our way of inviting you to join us on a journey of rediscovery, exploring a tiny selection of favourite wild birds, their ecology, migration and song, as well as the folklore and songs associated with them. This first episode is for the cuckoo, the iconic herald of spring.
Meeting is pleasure. and pardon is a grief, and an inconstant lover is worse than a thief. A thief can but rob me and take all I have, but an inconstant lover sends me to my grave.
The cuckoo's behaviour is infamous. They lay their eggs in another bird's nest and leave the poor unsuspecting birds to raise their young for them. Their song is also unmistakable, the surest sign that spring has arrived, that winter is gone and summer is on its way. Birds come up a lot in Irish folklore and mythology, and there are lots of associations with cuckoos in particular. Niall McCutcher is a writer who has written lots about folklore in Ireland, including one book called Ireland's Birds, Myths, Legends and Folklore. I met with Niall in Phoenix Park one afternoon to ask him about birds, the cuckoo and the folk beliefs we still associate with them in Ireland. Could you tell me, what do birds mean in Irish folklore? What way do they come up in mythology and old stories?
Well, they come up in lots of different ways. They're kind of, I suppose they're sort of a favourite symbol of messengers between this world and the other world, because they can fly, obviously, so they can fly up into the sky, into the other realms, and they, bird song as well, they can sing, which kind of, there's this whole idea of transporting people away to another realm. So, they have this whole idea of being otherworldly and sort of messengers from the other world, from this world to the other world or whatever.
So I know that there's some reference in mythology to somebody maybe falling asleep listening to the birds, or the effect of the birds on them. Could you tell me a bit about that?
There's various stories about a monk, say, hearing a bird song and going into a wood to listen to it and thinking he's only there for a few minutes, and then he comes out and discovers he's been 100 years or something listening to the birds, because it's this whole idea of the other world, that like what seems like 5 minutes there is actually hundreds of years here. And I think it's this whole idea of when you're engrossed in something and it's sort of, you don't feel the time passing. So it's this kind of idea of a magical time or a magical sense of time.
It makes sense though. I mean, I've spent a lot of mornings, even just in the making of this program, just sitting listening to the birds for a couple of hours, you know, and it really is transportative. When you start to tune into what's going on, they have their own other world up there, don't they?
When you first hear the cuckoo, that kind of sets your luck for the rest of the year. So if you hear the cuckoo with money in your pocket, you'll have plenty of money for the next year. But if you hear the cuckoo before you've had your breakfast, or if you're hungry, then bad luck for you, you're going to be hungry for the rest of the year. And there's various variations on this. If you hear it from the left side, that's bad luck, because the left is generally bad luck. If you hear it from the right side, that's good luck. And if you're unfortunate enough to hear it in a graveyard, the first call of the cuckoo, then somebody you know will die within the year.
So come May time, you're desperately trying to fill your pockets with money and make sure you're well fed and not hanging around graveyards.
Stay away from graveyards, in case you hear the cuckoo.
In terms of the cuckoo as a bird, obviously we all know that the cuckoo doesn't make its own nest, it doesn't lay eggs in its own nest, it doesn't raise its own young. How does that crop up in folklore and mythology?
There's this idea of the cuckold. The poet might be meeting his lover, and maybe the mistress is married, or one of them is married, and so they're alluding to this indirectly by talking about how they meet where the cuckoo sings or something like this, because you've heard of the idea of a cuckold. It's an old word for somebody whose their partner is having an adulterous affair. So there's this idea of the getting into the nest, as it were, and doing what you shouldn't be doing. It's kind of this link with the cuckoo. So in all these poems, there's an older husband who's maybe a bit cruel, and it's an arranged marriage or something like this. So you're supposed to be on the side of the young lovers, even if the older man is being cuckolded, as it were.
The cuckoo's a pretty bird. She sings as she flies. She brings brings us good tidings, tells us no lies. And when her time has come, her voice we don't hear, and she'll never sing cuckoo until an early
in damp meadows and wet grassy byways across the country, there is one particular wildflower that erupts with vigour during April and May. Its delicately pink-tinged bright white flowers decorating spring with a particular beauty. These flowers are called lady's smock, but another more widely used name for them is cuckoo flower. Brian and I went to meet with botanist Zoe Devlin in a meadow to see the bounty of cuckoo flowers with her expert eyes. Zoe's lifelong passion for native wildflowers has prompted her to write several books about the subject, as well as creating the wonderful website wildflowersofireland.net.
It used to be known, and probably still is, over in Britain more, and that is lady's smock. And in Irish, it has two names, Bialar Craigan, which translates roughly as ornamental cress, and then the other name is Lena Mura, which is Mary's nightdress.
And is that, I guess, that the flower looks quite beautiful and flowy, and it's this pale pinky white. I guess if you turn them upside down, it could be like a particularly gorgeous lady's nightgown.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can see it, can't you?
Yeah, the buds, pink. Just before they unfurl, have this gentle, would you call that mauve?
Yeah.
Lilac colour.
Yeah.
The flowers are totally white.
Lovely little heads of flowers, and then the yellow anthers in the middle.
And the cress, is it related to cress, like watercress that we'd eat?
Part of the family. You can eat the leaves of that.
Can you?
You can.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not
tried.
It's not just the caterpillars who eat it.
Yeah.
So will I try a little bit?
Do, yeah. You still alive? They're pollinated by almost everything, as far as I know.
Really?
Yeah.
So butterflies, bees, flies, moths.
Yeah.
Hoverflies.
A lot. Yeah. They love the damp, you know. They love this. This is perfect. This habitat is just what the books say. Damp meadows.
Floating above the grasses and the other wildflowers.
Yeah. And for company, then they have the beautiful meadow buttercups. You see them there. They're standing proud with their beautiful leaves and the ribwort plantain, and there was common vetch to one side, there was germander speedwell further back, bush vetch I saw on the way to around here, all typical meadow plants.
The cuckoo flowers earned this name because it comes into flower just as the cuckoo arrives back from Africa in April. In nature, timing is everything, and in the finely woven web of interconnected life cycles, many species depend on each other's timing for their reproduction and survival. Orange-tip butterflies are especially keen on cuckoo flowers, but crucially, the cuckoo flower is these caterpillars' primary larval food plant. Zoe, look, I think I spot two orange-tip butterflies.
You do indeed. Well spotted. Oh.
If we creep up slowly, we might see them laying their eggs on the cuckoo flower.
Well, that's a male, so it's kind of unlikely to happen because it's got the orange tips. But the female... Oh, she's down there, I think, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's down below, I think.
Yeah, she is.
Oh, she's waiting for him to...
We are about to watch the male and female orange-tip butterflies mating on the base of a cuckoo flower.
Oh, isn't that just wonderful to see that? Away they go.
And are there any eggs of the orange-tip or the green-veined white butterfly on this stem here?
On this stem? No, I can't. Ah, there. See?
Oh, yes, tiny little white egg.
That's a fresh egg because it's white. And after a few days, that'll turn orange and be far easier to find. Mm. But that's a fresh one. She usually only lays one egg under each cluster of flowers. If she lays a few, the first one to hatch will usually gobble the other ones up.
It
It's amazing, though, to think, like, if we're looking around here, there's this huge expanse of all sorts of grasses and the meadow buttercup and these cuckoo flowers. I wonder how many, tens of thousands of little eggs of orange-tipped butterflies and green-veined white are in this just one meadow. Yeah.
I bet if you were to spend an hour just going along this little patch, you'd find quite a few, probably.
Yeah.
Turning them over and see, you know.
Unfortunately, species-rich meadows are a habitat type that have been wiped out across Ireland in recent decades, drained and reseeded, replaced by other, more profitable activities. As the landscape continues to change and whole webs of life across Ireland's habitats are steadily unravelling, cuckoos, too, have been struggling to survive.
Yeah, they've been drained, unfortunately, a lot of them, you know, and it's a shame to see the habitat gradually being eroded like that. It really is, but it's happening, and you just notice it. It's disappearing, and that's not good. I remember seeing cuckoo flowers some years ago in the Burren, and I looked at it and thought, beautiful. And we went up to another level of the hills and sat down, and the next thing, something orange caught my eye, and it was the gape of a cuckoo. It was sitting on a hawthorn branch being fed by its mother, so to speak, a little meadow pipit. And the meadow pipit was about a third of the size of the cuckoo, and the cuckoo was sitting there with its wings vibrating like, feed me, and its gape wide open, you know? And it was such a sight, one of those sights that burns itself into your memory forever. But it was a lovely connection between the cuckoo flower and the bird. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I love it. And funny, every year when you see something that you haven't seen since the previous season, it kind of attaches you to the world again, doesn't it? No matter what's been happening in your life, it falls away for a while. It gives you such a lift.
Such beauty.
Should be on prescription.
Yeah.
Cuckoo's song is so musical that it's no wonder it's had such an influence on traditional music. It's a simple phrase, but it's unmistakable. There are a lot of tunes in the Irish tradition dedicated to the cuckoo, like that tune, The Cuckoo Waltz, played by Aoife Granville from Dingle on the flute. A well-known harp tune written by Turlough O'Carolan in the 1600s, best known as Shebag Shemore, was also documented a number of times under the name The Bonnie Cuckoo or The Cuckoo. And it's even sung as a song to the same tune in England. It's only when I heard the cuckoo singing along with Leisha Kelly's harp playing that I realised how similar one of the phrases of the tune is to the cuckoo's song. Apart from the instrumental tradition, the cuckoo comes up a lot in ballads across the English-speaking world. It's often associated with dishonesty or deception in love, as it is in the American version of the ballad The Cuckoo, which Zoe Basha has recorded for this episode. I was curious, though, to know more about the cuckoo in Irish songs. So I dropped in to see my friend Mairead Ní Uaimhne at her home in Carrigfinn in northwest Donegal.
Well, Well, the thing about the cuckoo, it's a very cheeky little bird when you think about it, you know. It takes over another bird's nest and throws all that bird's eggs off the side. And, you know, it's one of those interesting little birds that you say, how dare the cuckoo do that? But then you forgive the cuckoo because it sings so beautifully and it's heralding the summer as soon as you hear it. Beautiful light and everything that's good in the world. So we maybe forgive the cuckoo sometimes. But yes, it does appear in a lot of English songs. The cuckoo is a pretty bird, sings as it flies. And then there's another few ones about the cuckoo's nest, which is a very bawdy wee song that Brian Mullen sings. And then, of course, in the Gaelic language, I think of Cua Mullan the Wee, which is one of the oldest songs that I've heard sung around the parish of Gidor and the Rosses and Clonmel, I suppose, all of the northwest. You know, it's just one of those songs. I remember there was an old man from Marragallen, Corney, and any time he was asked to sing, he always sang Cua Mullan the Wee. And it went on forever, but everyone loved it because it was a great storyline, you know. I suppose it's just one of those interesting metaphors for, well, I suppose being a cheeky bird is one and maybe taking over somebody else's love is another way of looking at it.
So what's the story of this song, Cua Mullan the Wee?
Yeah, well, the song is kind of strange in the Gaelic language as it's a ballad, so there's a storyline within the song, which is quite rare in the Gaelic tradition. So the story starts where the husband and the wife are walking up the road, and next thing they meet the Gruaga. Gruaga can orbi. You know, he's very exotic looking, this Gruaga, and like sometimes people would say that he's magical, far she, because he's so he just stands out. But the husband's a bit kind of cocky as well, as he thinks that, you know, the Gruaga asks the husband, is this your wife or your daughter? So there must be a huge age difference between the husband and the wife. And that goes to the Amshara Drochseel, you know, Amshara Drochseel, when there wasn't that much money around. So young girls would marry older men in order to have security. But then there was this thing as well, which would have been a very old tradition, where if the young girl married an older man, she was allowed to go off with other people. That was a great life, isn't it? And anyway, so she was allowed to go off. So what he says to the Gruaga, you go one direction and I'll go the other direction. And he thinks that she'll follow him home, but she doesn't. She follows the exotic Gruaga. And then she only stays there for a while because, you know, she wants to come home. But the husband isn't very happy when she comes home. And he kind of says, well, what if I had died? And in some versions, he has died. So it could be a ghost that's talking, you know. So there's a lot of elements in this, which is quite strange. And there's a medieval thing coming through as well, where, you know, the lord was allowed to have the young lady the first night of her marriage. And so I hear echoes of a very old, old tradition. And then the song just being very entertaining as well. The Mishus Malan Maglagala Bar Soro Gramori is Kekasi Dunya Kroikahan Norwe Kuamalundubi. Jeffrey Shedus and Indu and Oig van Soro Gramori. A steward my hen gor be my van Foss, the Kuamalundubi. A daughter to do so he had a joy, Soro Gramori. On the yen at the shinnum yen, my coil at Kuamalundubi. Go hissing a mullig as mission a moon to Soro Gramori. Caslanchi and Rigia Pahiki, the noigi, Kuamalundubi. Delmanoala go boer a crete, Soro Gramori. Vaslima, she's a malabiti ray, Kuamalundubi. O Kuhanu, Gaskuha, Mara, Soro Gramori. Cos cua the Callaghan like a can ray you cua mo londu gui.
Cuckoos are famous for laying their eggs in the nests of other birds. But something they don't get much merit for is their impressive migrations. To find out where our Irish cuckoos go once all the eggs are laid, to be cared for by some poor unknowing meadow pipit, we spoke to someone who has begun following their journey south each summer. Sam Bailey, a conservation ranger with the National Parks and Wildlife Service, has been working on a project to satellite tag cuckoos so that the details of their migration might be revealed.
So this year we embarked on a project with the British Trust for Ornithology to track some of our Irish cuckoos. And so what we've been doing, we managed to catch some cuckoos in Killarney National Park and the Burren National Park, and we put a satellite tag on their back. So it's like a little backpack with a little aerial sticking off the back with a little sonar panel, and that is linked to a satellite so it can pick up and track where they go.
You've even got a solar panel on the satellite tag.
Yeah. It's quite an impressive piece of equipment, but obviously it has to be as small as possible so that it doesn't infringe on the birds and their natural abilities to do what they do. And these amazing little sonar panels, you know, sort of provide that for it. So
it must have been gorgeous to see the cuckoos close up, because they're a bird that, like, I listen to all summer long but never actually get to see them. They've got gorgeous patterns, don't they?
That's right. They have this amazing sort of plumage which sort of makes them look a bit like a bird of prey. And in the wild, they tend to very much keep themselves hidden with the trees, and you'll often see one, might see one just fly across and then disappear into another tree again. So you often don't get a great look at a cuckoo. But yeah, they have this amazing sort of barring on the belly, grey sort of on the back and on the wings, quite a long tail, and very small feet. They've got quite short feet, which is very different from a bird of prey, which has quite long legs.
Small feet, that they're not trying to catch their prey with their feet.
No, their prey luckily doesn't run away too far from them. They only feed on hairy caterpillars.
You're kidding me?
No, just hairy caterpillars, that's it.
My goodness. And would that be in the summer and the winter?
Yeah, that is. So they literally only feed, as an adult, they only feed on hairy caterpillars. So they have to collect them wherever they are, which is part of the reason they can't stay here for the winter, because we don't have any hairy caterpillars here in the winter. So they have to migrate anyway, so they have to move.
What we really want to know is exactly where do the cuckoos go for winter? So Sam began to show me the maps on his computer, which show the route travelled by these satellite-tagged birds. And what you've got here on screen, you're showing me a map of Ireland with some lines, and this is tracing, what, the cuckoos that you caught in Killarney National Park, zigzagging around Munster before they take off over the Irish Sea.
Yes, that's pretty much, they all went into France, and then two of them ended up in northern Italy, and then they basically ended up spending a bit over a month in northern Italy, while the other one went over to Bosnia and Herzegovina and spent about a month there.
So these would be kind of late summer stop-off points.
Well, it's actually still early summer, because they pretty much start kicking off by the end of June.
The end of June?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Like, they're so bold, aren't they? Getting their eggs and getting the meadow pipits to raise them, that they don't have to do the work of raising their own fledgling. They can just take off at the end of June and head over to beautiful places like northern Italy and Bosnia and Herzegovina.
It is, and it is quite amazing. But there's also another reason why they do that, because the reason why they spend such a long time in these areas around, you know, Italy, Bosnia and Herzegovina, is that they have to do a major feed up for their next part of their journey. Two of our birds, so Tork and KP, they were given names so that we can know which ones.
Tork after Tork Mountain.
After Tork Mountain.
Kerry.
Yeah. from Killarney National Park. After a month of feeding up, it then did a big sort of migration. And what they do, they do this effectively in one big go without feeding anymore. They cross the Mediterranean, cross the Sahara, and then in the case of this one, it spent a load of time at an oasis just at the southern end of the Sahara, which it then did a load of feeding up. Tork did it slightly differently. He came across to Bosnia-Herzegovina, then came down to the southern point of Greece, did a little bit of time there, and then did this, well, quite funny-looking zigzag across to Algeria, across the Mediterranean, then zigzag back across towards Sudan. And they're very keen on the area around Darfur, seemingly. So both KP and Tork spend a lot of time around the Darfur region of southern Sudan, which is where they managed to do their last little bit of feeding up to get across the rest of the Sahara. But our other cuckoo, our third one, was a little bit different. So this was Kors, named after the mountain in Killarney National Park. Kors, after spending about a month in northern Italy, then decided to do this very strange route going back northwest, back into France, up to near the Loire. Did this in pretty much in sort of a day and a half, spent a couple of days around there, and then headed over to Switzerland, spent a little bit of time around Switzerland, literally, again, a couple of days, and then disappeared off to Bordeaux. What was thought is that its feeding in northern Italy wasn't good enough. And that's what all that messing around was trying to find somewhere else to find food.
That's a long way to go to find food, yeah, crisscrossing the continent.
Yeah, so and I don't know if you see here, this bird here, this is one of the English birds, Michael, and it came down, all the way down through, and it was heading down to Spain, and it also reversed up. But then this bird didn't make it. This bird didn't survive. And that is generally what the BTO have seen from the past 10 years, is that if birds don't feed up and they do a big retrace of step, they tend to not survive. We were really worried about calls for this. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, it did this massive leap to near Barcelona and then went full hog, as you can see, and almost a dead straight line
right across
the Sahara. And so actually he managed to survive and managed to find enough food, got all the way over, right the way down to the bottom of the Sahara, and is now pretty much in the same place as the other two. And they are all now just on the edge of the Congo, which is, and as you can see, the habitat here is quite different. You can see on this map, this is big mountain forest. This is mountain gorillas, sort of habitat. So really, really good tropical forest, loads of food, importantly. Loads and loads and loads of food. They will be spending their winter there, feeding up. And as you can see, it's pretty much the same place as all the English ones as well. So they've done studies with birds in Germany, in Belarus, and they've even done the same species of cuckoo you also get in China. They tracked one bird from China, and it went all the way from China to the same place in the Congo. So right over from Beijing. So all these birds of this same species coming from as far west as Ireland and as far east as China all converge down to this one point in Africa.
Right, mind-boggling. Seeing it on the screen, seeing the distances that they're covering is incredible. The lovely thing about this project is that people can go online and see the route taken by any of the cuckoos that are being tracked. Just go to the website bto.org and find the Cuckoo Tracking Project there. It's so brilliant to be able to see where they stop off along the way and just how enormous the Sahara Desert is. I'm still stunned at the thought that the cuckoos I hear each spring in the fields below where I live have travelled this far.
There's no transfer from adult to young. The young don't even see their parents. They don't even know who their parents are. So there's no contacts, no nothing. Assumably, these birds that have done it once or twice, done that journey once and made it back, they will have a few pinpoints in their mind of where they'll know, but when they go and change what they do or do something different or have to adapt, or and especially with things like the Sahara is expanding so much, so there's not as many good feeding sites. So a feeding site that was there this year might not be there next year. So even with all the big droughts that were in southern Spain this spring, there were two of the English cuckoos that were tagged last year died this spring in Spain. They managed to pick up one of them and it was really emaciated. It basically had starved. Meadow pipit in Ireland is the main species that cuckoos nest in, and they are now on the red list. Meadow pipits are in decline. Our moth species, which is of course their major food, are in major decline. The habitat, which the moths need to feed on, is in decline. The migration route is getting harder because we're getting warmer. The Sahara and various areas that they feed are getting more unsuitable for feeding. So there's a whole series of factors building up.
There are more and more challenges in the way of a cuckoo's completing their life cycle successfully.
We all grow up knowing that cuckoo are an exceptional bird, tricking pipits, wrens and robins into rearing their offspring while they jaunt off to Spain, France, Italy, Greece and Croatia. Summer stopovers before their epic crossing of the Sahara. The enormous effort and the risk involved in this migration is a behavioural adaptation that has evolved over eons, carefully timed to coincide with the availability of their food, hairy caterpillars. It is a strategy that has been working well for cuckoos until now. Cuckoos are a clever species, endowed with impressive navigational abilities and capable of adapting to changing circumstances. But ongoing habitat loss here in Ireland is making things harder for them, and extended summer droughts across southern Europe make food harder and harder for them to find. Neither will cuckoo's charismatic nature protect them from the expansion of the Sahara Desert. We are truly running out of time to avert the worst of climate breakdown. There's an urgency now, like never before, to restore the balance of nature.
Cuckoos are an intrinsic part of the Irish soundscape. They found their way into our folklore, our music, our songs. They're an important part of the coming of spring. Their absence would leave a gaping void in the Irish countryside and in all their other homes along the route from here to the Congo. We might think of our cuckoos as Irish, but they've been defying borders for thousands of years. And now, as we face into an uncertain future, we might do well to worry less about borders and think more about our collective welfare. We need to be clever to ensure their safe passage, a safe climate, and a welcome habitat for them here while tackling all of these challenges with compassion.
The first episode of that series, Feather and Flock, was presented by Anya Murray and Brian McLean. Zoe Basha sang the traditional ballad, The Cuckoo. Aoife Granville played the flute and Brian McLean played bouzouki on The Cuckoo Waltz, as well as the closing tune, The Cuckoo's Nest. Harper Leisha Kelly played She Beag, She Moor. also known as the cuckoo. Mairead Ní Bhuinnigh sang the traditional song Cuach Mar Londamh Bui. Brian McLean played variations on the traditional tune on Drine On Down, as well as three new solo guitar pieces written for this episode. Sing Cuckoo was written by Brian and Diarmaid McLean, performed, recorded and produced by Brian on piano, tenor guitar, fiddle and harmonium. The score, Feather and Flock numbers 1 and 2, was written, recorded and produced by Brian McLean on guitar and percussion. All the soundscapes and bird sounds were recorded in the field by Brian McLean and Sean Renane of Irish Wildlife Sounds. The programme was produced by Anya Murray and the sound design was by Brian McLean.
This week's lyric feature was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland from the television licence fee. The producer for Lyric FM was Owen O'Kelly.
And as usual, that programme is available to podcast or to listen to again from the RTE Lyric FM website and from all the usual podcast platforms. Just search for the Lyric feature wherever you get your podcasts. You can contact the programme by email features.lyricfm@rte.ie.